Right now, it is time to bring in David Tarachuk. It's time for The Media Beat. You can find David, of course, at his own website, themediabeat.us. He is also a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And you can also find him posting at the Huffington Post. And you can find him right here live on a Friday morning. Good morning, David.
Well, hello. Isn't it exciting? I'm here in the media capital of the world, and this is an extraordinary media occasion. We're talking, as we're talking, live news is coming in. We can do that little trick that is so annoying a lot of the time of news announcers saying, we're just hearing. And we're just hearing in the past few minutes news that's happened in the past hour or so that we don't have a government shutdown. Isn't that exciting?
Well, you know, it's funny as I
well, you can hear the noise behind me, can't you? That's the noise of people spilling out into the streets, cheering and clapping and just expressing their huge relief that we do not have a government shutdown.
I very rarely watch the news anymore on TV just simply because it's frustrating. But before I went to bed, I did put it on and I saw Rand Paul, and one person's going to prevent this government shutdown, and then I wake up.
Well,
this
he was
morning.
Able to delay it a little bit.
Huh? Yeah, he delayed it, and then they
generally speaking, his rule. He's the irksome little jigger in the body politic.
And so then now it's on, but there's so much news that we tend to focus. And you, we have our people in this country, both pro and con. Arguing about the president of the United States, but you bring up in the email that I saw what we're going to talk about a little bit today is that there's another country going through the throes of trying to rid themselves of a president.
Oh, sure. Long-time listeners will be well aware of my great interest in South Africa. I spent 30, 40 years reporting on the South African struggle, and the last, what is it now? It's almost 20 years of a free South Africa. The struggle was won, but then the struggle of actually running a country now is what we're watching. And it's now several presidents since the first liberation president, who was President Nelson Mandela, who served one term at his own insistence. You know, he refused to go for a second term. He made it very clear when he accepted the nomination that he was only going to serve one term. He's as we know, of course, he's been a remarkable man and a remarkably outstanding exception to many rules, certainly in many countries around the world where presidents are, of course, very tempted to stay on. Heaven's sake, here in New York City, a certain mayor of the city, Rudy Giuliani, was tempted to stay on beyond the term limits there. But no, the presidency of the Republic of South Africa is very different from it was when Mandela occupied that position. Jacob Zuma is, I talk about him in my column this week in fairly uncompromising terms. I've called him a crude and deeply corrupt president who's also allegedly a sexual predator. Curious combination, that, don't you think? Doesn't it sound somewhat familiar to American ears?
It's curious. I have to interject, though, and this is important, and I am just... I want to go back to... I guess I want to go back to the government shutdown for one second, because... It's a question of what. Have you noticed that the information that's coming out actually has to be sifted by the person receiving the information?
Well, isn't that true of all information? But go on. What's your point?
My question is: was it always like? Did you always have to sift, or was there some clarity ever?
Oh, well, there were very, very much fewer outlets earlier on, so I guess the sifting process was relatively easier. But yes, I mean, now we do have to pick and choose. You and I both are constantly urging each week to be careful about you, how you pick and choose your sources and what sifting is done for us. Because in the end, we can't sift everything ourselves. Part of the point of the media is to do that job for us. And if we go to trusted sources, we can rely on that sifting being done well for us.
Well, here's an example. This morning, very early, I saw in your former paper, The Guardian, that there was a government shutdown. But then I saw someplace else that it was, you know, basically ours. You know, it had come and gone.
Yeah, yes.
And well, then I heard breaking
news.
Pay
attention to the time posting, the date posting, and more importantly these days, in terms of fast-moving stories, the actual hour posting. Hours and the minutes do matter. Yeah, The Guardian missed it. At least they were looking the other way when it happened, and a post was allowed to stay up longer than they would have wanted, I think.
And so what I always wonder about is when you are looking at a big situation such as removing a president, and mentally you're working on the hour, you know, you've just been trained at this juncture through your myriad outlets to work on your hour by hour. How do you follow the story?
Well, in a sense, we have to be patient and see how the story plays out. Journalists can't afford to do that, though, of course. They're working in a very competitive environment, and they have to put out whatever new stuff they have just in case the opposition gets it out first. But the best journalists, of course, and we get back to my point about going always to our trusted and tried and trusted sources. When you know who it is who's delivering it, there's a better chance of it being accurate. But watching the process, for instance, of the removal of a president, which is exactly what is happening in South Africa now, yeah, it does tend to change by the minute. And as a South African was saying to me on the phone yesterday, South African politics, just like our own, is a constant rumor mill, of course. And now, it's not so much that South Africa has a government shutdown, but what is true is that nobody looking in on the political process has any confident idea of exactly who is running the country. It may be still running, but who is doing the running? That's the mystery in South Africa. Jacob Zuma, the president who's now in the process of being removed, it won't be impeachment probably, it will probably be an agreement arrived at behind closed doors. But until now, and this is one significant thing about my thinking about South Africa at all, the South African example, is that he has survived a couple of terms entirely, which is almost a decade now. He's survived as another apparent Teflon Don. He's evading all the consequences of all sorts of reports about his veniality, his corruption, and his sexual profligacy too. There was an independent report, not by a special counsel in South Africa's case, as is going on here in this country, but a wonderful office that was created by the new Free South Africa's constitution back in 1994, the Office of a Public Protector. It's kind of a people's advocate, as it were. She studied very carefully his behavior in government, and in particular his financial behavior, and a very thoroughgoing condemnation of the way that he siphoned off public funds in order to make huge improvements to his own private real estate. And that, amongst many other things, involvement in the business community and one particular part of the business community in particular has meant that there is even a voguish phrase in South Africa, which is common enough throughout the developing world, but it means something very specific in South Africa. It's called state capture, when the state has been in effect captured by business interests. And in Jacob Zuma's case, it's a family of businessmen called the Guptas. All of that is now unraveling as investigations have gathered force. The time of reckoning is at hand. Within days, it's confidently predicted. I mean, it's already in process. So I am confident, and all other reporters looking at it are confident, that Jacob Zuma will be out of office in a matter of days. At the same time, guess what? This unrestrained, until now unrestrained, dictator, certainly autocrat of a man, has been appallingly arrogant and garrulous, character traits we might be familiar with ourselves. He went before the national executive of his own party. And it is worth stressing that it is his own party, the party that nominated him to be president in the first place, who is actually the main force behind his removal now. He went before their national executive committee and he said, he protested very firmly that the people still love me, his very phrase, the people still love me. Again, echoes from elsewhere in the world, I think. That's what autocrats do. They're convinced in their own mind that the people love them.
How long was he in power?
It's almost a decade now. Okay. And it will end in a couple of days. A repellent individual in many counts, and his time is finally up. And it's been organized in a way that it's interesting. The man who will be taking his place is, in fact, the current vice president. Again,
is that the crocodile?
With other places, not an ethical giant himself, I don't think, but a much preferable individual in many ways, and a stronger. We'll have to see what he turns out to be, but he's it's a matter of indisputable fact now that he's going to be the one who does transition into the office. The whole discussion at the moment is cased in terms of transition, not deposition or removal or still less impeachment. But the removal of the president is going to be achieved, and Cyril Ramaphosa will take the president's place. But he's been very concerned in how he's doing this to maintain what he calls the proper decorum. And we shouldn't, here's a direct quote from him, we should never do it in a way that is going to humiliate President Zuma. Well, many of us will say, well, why not? He's a man in need of humiliation. But that's not how it's operating. And Ramaphosa is a canny politician. He knows that Zuma still does have, if not widespread support, at least a considerable rump of support in the country. Maybe something like the 30% that people talk about here as being the base of our president, which you always have to deal with in some way or other. And in South Africa at the moment, the way of dealing with it is to ensure that the man at the top of that rump is allowed to go peacefully and perhaps not totally free of paying some kind of price for what he did to the country. Stealing the country is the most polite way it's been described recently. But there will be some form of remonstrance for him. He will be forced to, in some way, pay up. And within days, we can, as I say, confidently predict he'll be gone.
And was how long will it take, do you think, to start working on his replacement?
Well, his replacement is in place.
No, what I mean is start the, I don't want to say removal process, but is there usually a honeymoon process, given that there's much known about him already?
Oh, about the new one,
you mean,
Cyril Ramaphosa.
Yes.
There will have to be an election this year. That's the election campaign is starting. This is part of the election campaign. This is the effort by the much damaged party, self-damage inflicted by their own decision to make Jacob Zuma their leader and then the country's leader. The danger, of course, was that he so tarnished the office and so damaged the government of the country that the ANC, the liberation movement that fought ever since 1912 for a free South Africa, free of white supremacy, free of apartheid, was likely, actually getting more and more likely as each day passed, to lose the next election. almost unthinkable idea for many South Africans. So changing the men at the top is the first step in trying to ensure that they don't lose their grip on power. But it's certainly a big shake-up for the democratic process as a whole. So yeah, he'll be in office, and he'll be in office. They will probably win the next election, but not by anything like the massive majorities that the ANC has been used to, and that will be an important boost to the whole democratic process in South Africa.
And what is the, or are there multiple other parties, or what is?
There are. There's a, if you like, a moderate opposition, a loyal opposition. I mean, they use that quaint old British term still. They talk about an opposition that is definitely measured in its responses to the ANC. There's also a much more radical opposition party that has come up in the last few years as a split off from the ANC itself, younger, more radical, anxious for economic reforms that will benefit the wider populace. a response, of course, to the terrible corruption that the ANC has allowed to creep in, mostly from the top. It's the old saying that the fish rots from the head, and that's been exactly what's been happening in South Africa.
And what how much attention is it getting here in this country?
I'd say not enough. I mean, again, turn to the wisest and most trusted sources, and you'll find reports on South Africa. The best newspapers are carrying it. Sometimes the networks tuck it away as a two-minute story towards the end of their bulletins. But it's been rumbling along for some time. The last 2 years, we've seen a massive gear shift in South Africa, and this was the destination to which it was all moving. It was perfectly reportable on. You could report on it if you wanted to. But as I'm afraid is often the case with the American media, people haven't wanted to be that interested in it. I think the parallels of the moment, I don't want to belabor those parallels, but there are clearly some echoes across from South Africa to America's form of government now, with a president who is so controversial and accused of being just as corrupt in many ways as Jacob Zuma was, and in many ways absolutely as crude and as distressing to what his coming, what Zuma's successor is calling now proper decorum.
Right,
it's a quaint old phrase too, isn't it?
But given the lack of interest,
the echoes at least would prompt American media to be more interested. But that's not been the case.
And speaking of decorum, I just I thought of a test that I wanted to do, but have you ever noticed how words, the actual meaning of words get distorted with continued use?
Oh, gosh, yes. That's the way the English language works. I suspect that's the way all languages work. But what are you thinking of as a particular instance?
Well, my latest plan, if I don't have anything else to do in the next couple of weeks, is to line 15 people up and ask them what an allegation is.
Yeah.
It's going to make it multiple choice.
It's a wonderful choice. Word, alleged, isn't it?
Right.
I've used it myself in this broadcast, you may have noticed. I talked about a president being an alleged rapist.
Right.
And
the thing...
Well, in Zuma's case, that is absolutely accurate. He was accused of rape in a court of law. He was, in fact, acquitted, which I'm also at pains to point out. What's your complaint about people's use of the word alleged?
No, they're not using alleged. They're using allegation as though it's a statement of fact. Even though
turning what is alleged into a fact.
Right. But, and if you are not careful in your sentence, and if you keep using it, it just, you know, you're talking about the allegations. You're banging away about the allegations, and
Every now and again, someone has to step in and say an allegation is only an allegation. And in most of Western societies, an allegation means that the person is innocent until proved guilty, right?
No, we don't have that anymore. That's been canceled.
No, I don't agree with that. I think an allegation is not a legal term. It's not a legal term. It doesn't include an allegation doesn't induce someone being guilty or not guilty. An allegation is simply the statement of a fact that somebody has been accused of something.
Yeah, but it does make in journalistic practice, it does oblige us to be careful about what we say. And obliges us not to assume that the allegation is true. It is very easy to make the assumption that an allegation is true, and lots of people want it to be true, and that's why they keep repeating it,
but
I imagine.
As a journalist and a writer, I don't know if you have to pander to people who don't understand what the word means, is what I'm saying.
It's probably helpful to remind people every now and again that an allegation is only an allegation.
That I especially in this particular climate where there is some confusion about due process. Just because of everybody's hurry to be first with their information.
Well, that's why there are legal constraints on journalists, and whatever pressures and commercial pressures in particular, and time pressures that they may be under. That's exactly why we have concepts like contempt of the due process. We're under pain of contempt of law of court sometimes. To observe the, we might think of them as niceties, but we have to observe the convention that, yes, absolutely, an accused person is just that, an accused person and not a guilty person.
Right,
though in the Russian tumble, that can get very confused sometimes and not precisely applied.
And I think that I think that we now have, because of our multiple forums and platforms, etc. I think that it's. I think that I would have a very successful and amusing time with my.
Your straw poll of 15 people. Yeah, it would be interesting to know what people think an allegation is these days. Refinements, or it's not really a refinement, but an attempt to make this give this a little bit more clarity is people sometimes make the distinction between a court of law and the real world. We'll say, well, in a court of law, the person concerned here has not been proven guilty, but the swirl, the sheer volume of allegations being made, the very fact that there's a repeated pattern here, that's another word that creeps in with the, insidious intent, we can say that, under a lesser criterion for the burden of proof, we could say that the preponderance of evidence suggests.
Right.
And we can do that because we're not conducting a trial. We're writing in a substantially freer form of open journalism. And that's sometimes an abuse of our power as journalists. We do have to remember that even if there are thousands of allegations, they remain allegations until proven.
Thank you very much, David Terestruck, The Media Beat.